Hello and welcome to episode 524 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I am your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me everywhere online at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. Hi, guys.
Hi.
That was a creepy, weird smile. But happy October.
Happy October.
I look like a very pale pumpkin. Or what Charlie Brown looks like when he's 50.
Those white pumpkins. Those white pumpkins.
The little white squashes.
Yep. Yep. So, we have caught up on two movies, haven't we? We have seen two very big titles of this Oscar season, and I am very excited to talk to you guys about both of them. Of course, one being Once Upon a Time. One Battle After Another, and of course, I did not rapture after seeing it, so I am stuck with the sorry, I'm stuck with all of you.
I really liked it, but
I liked it too.
Rapture last week. Okay,
yeah. Yes, I didn't rapture last week, and then especially after not seeing the best film of the 21st century, as so many on Twitter have proclaimed. But we'll talk about that in a second. Then, of course, we are going to talk about Kathryn Bigelow's A House of Dynamite, which we have screened, and that comes out later on this month in theaters and on Netflix. And then, of course, we'll jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. There's a lot coming out this weekend. Just getting ready.
I did not even know that many movies were coming out this weekend. I was like, oh shit, here we are.
It's insane. But before we get started, everyone doing well?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, can't complain. I'm trying to think.
Sure, about you. What's the problem? Yeah. What's the point?
All I do is complain. What do you mean?
Oh, we have started this one off on, I have started this one off on a weird note. I don't know why. Anyway, I'm doing very well. I had a very good time on my annual friend trip to Orlando, and I went to the new Epic Universe, which was a lot of fun.
Epic? Although, was it epic?
It was so epic. And when you scan your ticket, they say, have an epic day, which I think works.
Yeah. I wonder that line went through, like, how many marketing, like, calls, like, should we say epic day? Should we not?
Epically awesome day. Epic.
Or was it just somebody who went rogue and decided to start saying that? Who knows?
It became viral amongst the Universal Employee Committee community. I had a good time. It was half of the rides were broken down, which was unfortunate. And Joey ran away. This does not want to be spoiled about Epic Universe. Still had a very good time. My favorite land was unexpectedly. Hi, you're back. My favorite land was unexpectedly the How to Train Your Dragon land, which looked amazing. It was this elaborate pier built around this beautifully crystal blue lagoon, and there was a roller coaster that ran through the water, and there was little boats that kids could get on and shoot each other with water. It just looked like a lot of fun, and I would have loved it when I was 9 or 10.
That's so cool.
They built French Harry Potter Land, which I assume comes from one of the movies that I haven't seen.
French Four? Harry Potter?
Fourth Harry Potter's will be introduced. A wand, little chocolate frog.
Is it a wand or a cigarette? Either way, I would burn you with it. Yes.
I'm a transphobic monster. Yes. Yeah, they introduced the French school in book four. I don't know why I'm explaining it, as if people are waiting on the edge of their seats.
I assumed, though, that there was more about France in the Fantastic Beasts trilogy. Okay. But those I've only seen one of those. But I did see a lot of girls walking around pastry. in that blue costume with that hat that looks like a pastry, a little blue pastry. Yeah.
That sounds cute. Sounds like something I would wear.
You would like that outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do I look this up?
I'll send you a link.
Please send me a link.
It's just ChatGPT real fast. So it was a good time. It was a really good time. Apparently, Blake Lively was down there at the same time I was. I did not see her or I did not recognize her, but so anyway, had a good time. So I'm glad it was exhausting. What was fun and exciting and doable when I was 35 is a little bit less so now that I'm 50. But it's okay. We'll be fine. What did you guys do this weekend?
Oh, what did I do? I can't remember now. Oh, it's such a blur. It's like Wednesday, so I'm going to the movies. What did I do? I can't remember what I did. No, I did something. Joey, what did you do? Please fill this dead air while I figure out.
So I went to. So Friday we started watching the new season of Drag Race UK, and then I alone watched a screener for the movie Good Boy, which my review of that will drop tomorrow.
Oh, I want to see it.
In theaters. I didn't realize how big the theatrical release of that movie is going to be, but like it's playing everywhere here this weekend, so I was really excited. And then I saw a documentary about Rocky Horror on Sunday. It's called Strange Journey, which I liked enough. I thought it probably could like scratch the surface a little bit more, but it was very enjoyable. And then that's about it.
Megan,
did a lot of lazing around.
I remember now what I did. I went to a brewery and then I played hockey, and then I went out to dinner with some friends on Saturday night. So that was about it. Nice. And got my hair did.
Nice. Did you go back to that Stevie Nicks place?
Yes, I did go back there. I love that place. That's my permanent place. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great.
All right. Well, while I was in Orlando, I was one of 8 people in the 7 p.m. screening of one battle after another. I don't want to call it once upon a time. Anyway, one battle after another. I went with friends and we were trying to figure out, you know, is it not popular in this area of the country, or is it because of the massive crowds that were coming for the Halloween Horror Nights event that they stayed away from that particular theater? And I'm guessing the latter, because, you know, 15,000-20,000 people driving to the same parking deck. And if you're going there, you're not going to want to be in that area unless you're going to that event, which, by the way, Halloween Horror Nights was a lot of fun. I usually do the houses multiple times. I only did the Terrifier house once because it was so gross. It was so gross.
I still need to see that Christmas movie, the Terrifier 3 one.
there was a body hanging upside down on the wall that had been chainsawed from the groin down to the sternum. There was the guy who had was bent over and a chainsaw had been shoved up his bottom.
Asshole.
Then you walk through a bathroom where there was all kinds of fecal matter and odors. And
all right.
Ew! Odors?
I was like, I'm going in. And then you said that. And I was like, and I'm going in.
You think it's real shit?
No, it's not real shit, but it definitely was, people loved it. But I assume that they've loved the movies. I've never seen one of them because I'm not really one for gore horror. So.
I've been wanting to see it. I just haven't.
All right.
I can just imagine Megan being like, Are they hiring ringers to like shit on the walls every day? Like,
oh, Megan, you would be such a perfect scare actor for the Halloween Horror Nights event because you are small enough to where you could play like the girl in the well and the ring. You know, you would be all over the place.
I did play a scare actor before in a haunted house a few years ago. I think it was right before COVID. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done because you have to stay in character this whole time. And I was by myself in this front room and I had like a voice and I was like, and I couldn't talk. But by the end of the night, I was so tired and like, I was helping out like a friend to do it. And I was just like, this was the hardest thing I've ever done. And staying and like trying to get them to do like press this button, you're like, ugh, you can't say same character.
I'm sorry, can you make that noise again?
Come on now, let's go.
The way that they
find a picture somewhere.
That would be awesome. The way that they do scare actors at Halloween Horror Nights is they give you, there's two different casts. So they're rotating you out. So you're not there for all 7 or 8 hours of the event, and these actors are performing these roles from, you know, mid-August to early November, 8 hours, 4 times a night. I mean, 4 times a week. It's a lot, and they don't speak. There are triggers that issue a recorded sounds, so they don't actually have to talk the entire night.
That's good.
So, yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the Fallout house as well. That was incredibly well designed. Ooh, and the Five Nights at Freddy's house, where they engaged with the Jim Henson Muppet Factory or Jim Henson Productions to create the life-size animatronics of the Five Nights at Freddy's figures. Oh, that was really, really cool. The house was meh, but the production design, I will call it production design. The production design was amazing. And I sent Joey a picture of the exterior of this haunted house that they built that was gorgeous. It was covered in wisteria too, which is what made me think of you. Anyway, enough about that. While I was there, I saw One Battle After Another, which is the first film we're going to talk about today, and it is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. I feel like everybody already knows what it is. Stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn. Leonardo DiCaprio plays an ex-revolutionary who is caught up in a madcap plot to try to save his daughter, played by Chase Infinity, as she has been kidnapped by Sean Penn for various reasons. And, you know, I think I don't want to go too far into that relationship because I definitely don't want to spoil things. Because I think a lot of the film's success and energy hangs on revelation of secrets and revelation of relationships and things like that. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I just don't think it's as great as others have proclaimed it. I would just put that out there. Whoever wants to jump in next, please.
I agree. My expectations were very, very high because of some people on the online. I think it's very good. I think I still think that PTA's best movie is There Will Be Blood. I think that's his masterpiece. I think I just think that movie is incredible. But this one, it was really it was a lot of fun. I thought that Leo was really good. Benicio del Toro, the music from Johnny Greenwood who did the music? I love the music so much. I think it's like, and it kind of doesn't stop. I noticed that it's just always there. Mm-hmm. They kind of just dial it back and then dial it up. And I really liked that. I thought that Teyonah Taylor is so good. And I was thinking about that today because, you know, she is in mostly the first half, and she makes such an impression really in that first half that you like want to see more of her in this. Like, no, it's hard not to talk about this without spoiling things, but you wanted her to come back. And I just think she was really good and made an impression. And one of the things that I thought that the film could have done more of is tell us a little bit more about her. I could have watched a whole film from her point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been really interesting. And I guess my critique of it was that I wish that it would have kind of fleshed out more of the female characters in it, like Regina Hall, like Teyonah Taylor. Although even Chase Infinity too, I would have liked a little bit more about her. But I guess all the characters were kind of they didn't really flesh out Leo either. But I really did like it. I thought that it had me going like the whole time. That somebody said like that 2 hours and 42 minutes like flies by pretty fast, and I felt that. I like there was only one part that I thought kind of dragged, and that was whenever Leo is on the phone trying to figure out his password and above the house, and then but then it just like picks up all over again. But yeah, I really liked it.
No, you liked it more, I think, than all of us, than b both Megan or I. So, because I know you mentioned something that was very interesting, an experience that I did not have, where you said, "I liked it more the more I thought about it," and
Right.
for me, it just didn't resonate at all, and I just kind of the more I thought about it, the more I kind of found holes in it. So, talk to me about your experience.
Sure. I saw it on Thursday at like 5:30. So my theater wasn't actually very crowded. There was maybe like 15 or 20 people in it. I want to see it in a more crowded space because I thought certain stuff was funny and I was laughing, and I was the only one laughing in my screening. No one else was joining me in the experience. I don't know. The thing that I kept thinking about was when I started it and we started seeing Sean Penn and realizing how the story was going to unfold. I originally thought he was playing it way too over the top, and then I sort of settled into it because I didn't realize what he was doing at first. And my biggest kind of takeaway, not takeaway, the thing that I keep coming back to is just, I was just like, wow, isn't like racism and white nationalism, like, look how fucking stupid it is. Like the, what is it called? The Christmas
Christmas Adventurers.
The Christmas
Club.
Adventurers. And I was like, I already know what I'm gonna make for this movie for my Oscar party. I have the backup plan is to make Christmas sweater sugar cookies if the first thing falls through. But then I don't want it to have I don't want to make it look like I'm promoting that.
Why don't you just make a drink French 75?
I have a no, that's too easy. I'm not doing that. I have to
He
make it hard on myself.
has to up the
You
degree of
do.
difficulty.
Yeah, geez. I'll bring the French 75 then.
I will take it and then kick you out. I don't know. I thought Teyonah Taylor had such presence. I was really locked in with her. Same thing with Regina Hall. I have to say now that I think that we always say someone like Catherine Hahn can do everything. Regina Hall can do everything too. So I did want more of her, but I want another like viewing of the movie. I want to like really pay attention to her, knowing that I'm not going to get her for the rest of the movie. I like how it's like a drama about a very serious thing in terms of how these people are revolutionaries and being very sort of, reckless and violent and stuff. But I sort of appreciated how, and I think Paul Thomas Anderson does this in a lot of his movies. There's a lot of like, it's really funny. Like, I was a little surprised at the sort of juxtaposition of, these people who are doing these things, like in terms of, setting bombs in bathrooms and all this other stuff. And then it's just so almost like madcap
in a lot of sections, like, I'm sort of astounded at the section of when Leo falls off the roof and he falls through the tree. I want to see how they filmed that.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that too.
Because I was like, is that him? Like, was he on a harness? I don't know. Like, I don't know how they would do something like that. But it was just like, I don't know. I felt like the, I'm trying to say this without sounding like super cheesy, but like, you know, it was still alive. Like, I don't want to say that.
No, it's very kinetic. It's very kinetic in the way that he directed it. It's like you take that scene from Boogie Nights where Alfred Molina is throwing the little kid is throwing the popping things and
throwing them on the ground.
Yeah. And it's jolting you. It's this constant anxiety. And there are tons of segments that are just like that in this film. It's like you're taking that 15 or 20 minute segment and you're spreading it out over 2 hours. I won't say 2 hours and 40 minutes because I think there are peaks and valleys here, but it is like that. It is the most energetic and kinetic thing that I think he has directed since Boogie Nights.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, I will say it's not his best film. I probably agree with you, Megan. I think his best film is There Will Be Blood, but it is the most propulsive and accessible and kinetic thing that he's ever done since Boogie Nights.
I think it's actually, in terms of looking at the movie, in terms of the kind of movie, not to talk about Oscars yet, but like in terms of just sheer entertainment value, I think there's a lot in it that a lot of different people can kind of latch onto with this. And I don't know, I just think the performances are great. I'm really fascinated with the costume design too. Like,
the robe.
Like, God, we're gonna see so many, we're just going to see Leo DiCaprio's and Gladys's at Halloween this year. And I'm fine with it.
Here for it.
I actually was just like, that would be the most comfortable Halloween costume ever. Do I want to be Leo? But
it made me think of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Arthur Dent, I think his name is, like, cause he's in a bathrobe the whole time. And because I saw some people were saying, oh, it's totally an homage to, I forget what they were saying it was. But like, or he was supposed to look a stormtrooper is what he said. Leo said that he wanted to look like a stormtrooper with his glasses. I was like, I totally got an Arthur Dent vibe. And I haven't even seen that movie or read the book, but I knew about that. But I wanted to add that I think that this film feels very of the moment of like, I thought, wow, I can't believe this is coming out now. And it feels very timely and, you know, with ICE and with people at the border. And I just thought, wow, this is kind of crazy that this is coming out right now. But then I guess we're just kind of in some sort of powder keg of a time right now where everything's exploding and everything is like this all the time. But I thought that it felt very of the moment, and that was thrilling too, that like, wow, this was worked on last year, but it's coming out now and it feels like it could come out like that. It's telling the story of today.
You know, it's interesting to think of how, I mean, I think people would be praising this movie no matter what, because people are really responding to how it's filmed and stuff, but I think there's a lot of anger in our country right now. There has been for, you know, like a decade, like really prevalent out there, very not shy to express it kind of anger. And I feel like the people who are upset with what certain people are doing to this country, I think are getting really like jacked up thinking about the stuff that's happening in the world and our country right now because of who is in office as they watch this movie. I find that to be very interesting. I want to read more reactions to it from people who aren't like white, straight film Twitter people. Like, I want to read, because I completely forgot that, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson is married to Maya Rudolph, and they have children. And I wonder how much, like, does he see himself in the character of Leo? I just haven't read on it. Maybe it's very widely talked about or published. You know, the whole thing about how in the beginning when we see Tiana Taylor and Leo DiCaprio together and they're in, like, the back of a car and he's just, like, yelling, like, I love black women. Yes, I love black women. So, I don't know. There's something, like, the people that aren't white, straight, cisgender men, like, not saying, like, their enthusiasm isn't great, but I want to read more. I saw some people tweeting about how they think certain people are underwritten or they don't like how this was directed or that was directed. And I'm not saying that that's going to color my thoughts of the movie. I just really think, I think I just missed, like, some film criticism, especially about this movie, because it feels like the predominant, like, about it is from white straight guys. And I want to get a more well-rounded red experience from it. But I like it a lot. I think it's widely entertaining. The performances are good. I guess we can't talk about what happens to Sean Penn because that would be spoilery. But I think the way that something happens at the end to him, I think is hilarious and very much worth talking about in those conversations that we have down the road during this Oscar season. But yeah, I think I am higher on this movie than both movies that we're going to talk about than both of you. But
I think that, like, Teyana Taylor, her character, Perfidia, right? Perfidia. Mm-hmm. She writes a letter in the film. And I would have liked to have seen the act of her writing the letter as some, that, like, seeing that would have added something to the film, I think, in a way. Because up until that point, we didn't get that, what's in the letter from her. And I felt like, where is this coming from? And I don't know when that was written. I don't know, you know, what in what context, how Leo acquired it. But I felt like that would have added actually something to it. Because I'm like, we stick with other characters throughout the story when the story is kind of resolved. Like Sean Penn. And it's like, why do we stick with him and not stick with these other characters in the story if they're still in the stories, technically?
I think it's because POV thing. Yeah, I think it's because she is such a powerful presence in that first, and I'd say she's in the first third of the film, but she's such a powerful presence that she is the catalyst for all of the action that happens through the rest of the film, for all of the character interactions. Right. She is that person that pushes everything forward, and I don't think he reintroduces her because she better serves the story at that point as a specter hanging over all of them. And if you kind of bring her back, then I don't know that would necessarily work. I would argue there, I have a lot of things to say based on some of the things you guys have said. I would argue though that we don't necessarily need or deserve the ending to Sean Penn.
Right.
I would have been totally fine if you had cut the film, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but if you had cut the film when two characters in a car and they're reconnected and they're hugging, ended it there. Because it is a film about that family relationship. And I would argue that everything that comes after that is kind of superfluous, except for the letter. Because I don't get the point of what happens with basically the Sean Penn epilogue. But I know I'm bringing up something that's challenging because we can't really go into specifics, but right. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, this might be a challenge for me to say, I think the way that a certain character sees themselves and the greatness that a character thinks that they are, the fact of how that scene ends feels very, I don't want to say fitting, but it feels like how that scene ends, you know, with the people like, one battle after another charades.
But I know what you're talking about.
But I mean, do, like, know what you're talking about. I think that just that to me, I kind of like that because it made me think about, it's like, wow, what a sad motherfucker you are. Mm-hmm. Like that, it felt like a very kind of deserved epilogue for him. Like, we'll have to talk about this later, but
that's fair. I guess where I kind of, you know, one of the things that I, and again, I do like the film, but one of the things that keeps me from elevating it to something great is it traffics so heavily in politics. It is a film of the moment. You're absolutely right about that. It traffics so heavily in politics early on. And then it brings up really interesting conversations. And then, you know, then we get the whole Benicio del Toro subplot and the and his kind of what he calls the Underground Railroad happening in his house. And that is really interesting. But I don't think that it really deals with them in any interesting way. I think it becomes by the end, oh, look at the Christmas Adventurers Club. They're just racist white guys. And aren't they hilarious because they're so evil and racist white guys? But nothing happens to them in the end. And and maybe that's the point, is that there was always going to be this person and there was always going to be those struggling against that person. I don't know. I think the political message is kind of muddled a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. Because I'm also like wondering how Chase Infinity's character becomes politically active, which is...
That is a huge, like, huge leap that they make without any explanation or justification at the end, where, you know, and again, I don't want to spoil the ending, but Leo has started the film by not allowing her to have a cell phone, by not letting her go more than 50 feet away from the house, basically. And then all of a sudden, you know, she's off and running at the end. And there's no connector. Like, how did he get to that point? That was wild.
It was just kind of like, okay. And I love the ending though. I mean, I do love the ending. I love the music. I love the music in it is great. There were some things where you have to kind of fill in the gaps yourself. Even with a key scene between Teyonna Taylor and Sean Penn, I was kind of like, wait a minute, what did happen there? And then that kind of gets revealed later on. But I was like,
indeed.
There's lots of things where it's like they're kind of like not showing you everything that you need to make a decision about what you think is going on. Like,
yeah. And in some ways it is interesting for that, you know, but, I wish I had seen the film in a bubble, like most people did, where I didn't have every person on Twitter telling me that it's the greatest film of the 21st century, where I didn't have, you know, everybody just shouting their opinions. Oh, look at this scene. You know, this scene where Benicio del Toro gets pulled over is the funniest scene in a comedy that has ever been created. And I'm just like, I don't get these impressions. I don't get this. And I wish I had seen it in a bubble. I wish I had seen it, you know, before all of this. I wish I'd seen it in an audience that had more than 8 people in it who were engaged with the film. You know, I wish a lot of things, and I probably would think of it differently. But right now I'm struggling with a kind of a muted reaction to what has been told to me was a brilliant, great all-timer.
I will say a tweet that I thought was a joke that I saw was somebody like on Monday or Tuesday of last week. So like, you know, the couple days before the movie was coming out on Thursday night, Friday. And they were like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to be the last person to see this movie. I have tickets for Friday. And I was just like, you're seeing it on opening week, like, shut up.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's crazy.
I do think that, like, I think the enthusiasm is, I'm wondering to see how the follow through on this is going to be. Now, I will say the in terms of how it sustains is going to be very interesting, because some people are like, that's it, it's over, and I was like, it's September, motherfuckers. And not saying that front runners haven't been anointed this early, but like, I don't know, it has an A cinema score, which is really great. And I don't think, I didn't know what the box office did, but
It has an A
I don't
cinema
know.
score because the Paul Thomas Anderson Elite flooded the opening night screenings. And it, like, if you looked at Rotten Tomatoes, it started off like that. And again, I know Rotten Tomatoes can be easily corrupted. I'm just saying, if you looked at it at the beginning of the weekend, it was at a 92 user rating. By the end of the weekend, it had dropped down to an 85. I think I have nothing against this film at all. I want it to be successful. I want people to go to the movies. I want Paul Thomas Anderson to his films to make money, because I want to see what he does next, because I think he's a really fascinating filmmaker. But it's interesting because I think longer term, once it gets played out in New York and LA, I don't think anybody in the rest of the country is seeing this film in the same volume that New York and LA audiences are.
Right. I'm actually really impressed with impressed slash surprised that like so many people are like, I'm gonna see it in every format that I can. And I was like, glad you have the time.
Oh my God, that was one thing that was driving me nuts too. There was people would take screenshots of an IMAX screen and they would say art, and I'm like, it's just a bigger picture. It's not. It's. It wasn't. You know, it's not giving you anything new. It's, and I love that scene with the roads that go up and down toward the end. But
Yeah.
it's. It was just like, it was the same thing that everybody's making fun of for The Wizard of Oz and the Sphere, where it was 85% sky and 15%, you know, some action going on. And that's what, yeah, come on, come on. Leonardo DiCaprio's face was, you know, 70 stories tall. Well, you know, it's just bigger. It didn't change the film. It didn't give you a different experience, I don't think. Granted, I haven't seen it in that format, so I can't say for sure.
I did see, like, I knew that, like, as someone who, like, really enjoyed the movie a lot, I want to see it again in the biggest audience that I possibly can. I might go see it on Friday night. I don't know. That I saw someone took, like, a shot of the road, which I love that scene. That scene is so
Yes.
cool. I love how
Yes.
close the camera is to the road. And I was just so nervous the entire time. But I saw someone's, like, if we could give an Oscar to a stretch of highway, this would win. And I was like, I'm gonna set you guys on fire.
Wait.
God.
I fell the wrong way. Anyway, it's early, but let's talk about the Oscars for a second. It'll be really interesting if this film drops off in terms of box office, because it's not a, in, you know, broadly embraced film across the United States, because there's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be a political message tied to this film. I almost got sick to my stomach when I read Deadline was like, how is this film performing in red states? How is it performing in blue states? I'm like, what? You know, it's
I'm gonna kill
that
myself.
divide, that narrative is going to be persistent throughout the entire year. And it's just going to be seen as, you know, if this film wins Best Picture, it's just going to be written off as, okay, that's it. Woke Hollywood and leftist politics are forever, you know, the Oscars are
I
forever gone.
also do not want to see the showdown between Chloe and PTA for
No.
director, thinking about the sexist, probably racist comments too that'll come out from this, and the bros that are gonna come at. Like, I was just thinking about that when we were talking earlier, and I was thinking, oh, and especially because they'll be like, she already has one, and that movie sucked. You know, people are gonna say stuff like that. It could get ugly.
It will.
Yeah, it will get ugly.
Or against a man of color who is making Sinners, you know, one of the highest grossing films of the year as well. And all of a sudden now these film Twitter people who are all, you know, like, oh, you know, we need to be sensitive and we need to be inclusive and all that stuff. Now they're saying, oh, white guy made a great movie.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I think people are also just really excited because he's been nominated, I think, 11 times.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, and I'm sure someone's going to say, well, Sean Baker won 4 Oscars last year. Mm-hmm. And yes, he did. I mean, I could see him. I could see Paul Thomas Anderson winning for director and screenplay. I really could. Just because people, you know, he's considered an auteur, he's considered overdue. So I would not be mad if he won something for this movie. But I would think that I think they're going to play really hard to an overdue narrative for him because he's, what was his first nominated movie? Boogie Nights, I think. Yeah. So, the Boogie Nights. It's like Boogie Nights.
I mean, I would be totally fine with him winning Best Director. Because some of those scenes are like that scene with the road, that is brilliantly directed. That is like pure, that is just pure filmmaking bravura there.
Say cinema, say it's pure cinema, say it!
But, you know, it is cinema, Joey. It is cinema in its greatest.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
I do have questions as whether or not this film can win on a preferential ballot.
There are a lot of films coming out this year because I was not to bring up Begonia, but Begonia is a film that is great, but I think I keep thinking about how that, like, what is a mainstream audience going to think of that film? And I think you're right with this one. Like, how is this going to play with, you know, people that want something a little more payable? So want something more middle of the road, pun unintended.
I think people will, I understand there are going to be people who are going to, you know, say like, oh, it's political, it would be political. But I actually do think that, I've been thinking a lot about Begonia. I was talking to somebody today, literally a couple hours ago. I was like, I'm really surprised that so many people have Begonia in their best picture prediction. So I was like, I think that is going to divide people with certain things that happen in that movie.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think some people might latch on to the just sort of entertaining nature of this movie.
And, you know, think of it as like Anora, too, because we were all like, oh, they're never going to give it to Anora. This, like, you know, about a, like, stripper. But, like, you know, clearly we were wrong. I'm sorry. But clearly we were wrong. You know, a lot of people, like, friends.
Clearly you learned nothing from Anora.
Friends that I know that are not prudes were like, there's a lot of sex in this movie, which maybe I don't know what my problem. I was like, I don't even really think there was that much sex.
Well, someone messaged me that last year. It's like, there sure is a lot of sex in this movie. And I was
I didn't think anything of it. Well, yeah, I would just like, oh.
I would direct everyone to the highest rated article on The Contending written by David Phillips, Anora is not porn.
Yes. That's like the internet is for porn. Like, that's what I feel like that should be the song should be sung. Anora is not porn.
We need to find a way to write articles about every film title and then put porn in there.
You should be like, porn, now that we have got your attention, please talk to the costume designer of Begonia.
Hamnet, misery porn. You know, I do want to take back something I said. First of all, I think Begonia can absolutely get into Best Picture because it is because of that fact where it is a hate it or love it film, where I think there, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos has devoted fans and they're going to put it at number one. And all it needs is a certain percentage just to get nominated. So I think it's, you know, I think it will get nominated. I don't think it, you know, has any shot in hell of winning. I do think I want to take back something I said where I the more I thought about it after I said it, you know, how one battle after another can perform on a preferential ballot. I think it's essentially going to come down to three movies, and those three movies are going to be at the top of everybody's ballot. It's going to be One Battle After Another, Sinners, and Hamnet. and it just, where those numbers line up, that's it.
What about Sentimental Value, though? A lot of people love that one.
A lot of people do love that one.
There's some serious love for that one.
And that will be high up there, too. That's probably 3 or 4. Yeah. You know, I don't know where the positions are, but, you know, it just depends on where. I can see a scenario where Hamnet wins Best Picture because it is the story. If the actors carry that forward, because it's a story of acting and performance healing a you know, severe depression, or healing the soul, essentially. And then Paul Thomas Anderson winning Best Director.
Yeah, I could see that too. Yeah.
But I actually right now have, and I'm interested to see where you guys land on performances. I think I have Leo, Teyana Taylor, Sean Penn, and I struggled with the fifth slot on Best Supporting Actor, so I threw in Benicio del Toro too.
I think I threw him in too.
I would love to see, of all of those, I think the most deserving nomination is the one that probably won't happen, and it's Chase Infinity.
She is really good in it. Yeah.
She'll get a lot of, like, I think the, you know, breakthrough stuff is really going to help her.
Was she in the Apple series with Jake Gyllenhaal? What is it called?
Presumed Innocent?
Yeah, she was. Okay, I think I saw her. I was supposed to talk to her at the TV Fest, and I didn't get a chance to talk to her.
Did you know that her name... I don't know if this was announced today, but someone said that her name comes from Dr. Chase Meridian from Batman Forever and Buzz Lightyear to Infinity and Beyond.
I did not hear that, but I did see she did a quiz with Teyana Taylor and Regina Hall about two truths and a lie, and the lie was that she's named for two corporations.
That's funny.
I'd love to see her get nominated. I think she gives the most honest and real and emotional performance in the film. She's kind of the linchpin in a lot of ways.
Yeah, she really is.
All right. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this much more, and eventually we'll have a spoilery podcast where we can talk about all those things not encoded. But let's talk about A House of Dynamite. And Megan, why don't you tell us what House of Dynamite is?
Well, House of Dynamite is what happens when Oppenheimer succeeds. I kept thinking, like, double feature, Oppenheimer in this film, forget Barbenheimer. It's Oppenheimer in this one. Okay, is it Rashomon? Is that the format of the, like, Rashomon, different points of view? Rashomon. Yeah. Why am I always saying this wrong? Rashomon. And so it starts with one point of view, which is on, like, a foreign object flying through the air toward the United States, and it takes different points of view on that object and whether it is a nuclear warhead, whether it'll malfunction, whether all the different scenarios. I thought this film made me so nervous, because it also made me think about, like, all of the scenarios, like, women like me go through in our heads with dating. Like, what if they're doing this? What if they're doing that? Like, I'm like, women should be in the Pentagon figuring out all the scenarios, because they would have them all. Like, I described this film in a few ways. I described it as bad foreplay is what I said. Because I started out with watching this film and feeling like, God, that first half hour is incredible. I thought, with just, like, Rebecca Ferguson is so, she's so good in that first section. And it's very intense, and, you know, Catherine Bigelow has a way of really keeping tension and stuff. And, like, I mean, Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty, Point Break. And then it kind of will diffuse the tension with the new segment of the different point of view. And I felt dread throughout the first, like, oh my God, I don't even know if I can take this. There's so much dread. But then the dread started to diffuse as the film went on, because I was like, okay, we haven't gotten to what's happening yet. What, like, the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bam, what is this? And I felt that it diffused where it got almost into like irritation by the end of it. And we can talk about stuff. We don't have to spoil things, but I was very disappointed with this film.
You and I are so in sync this week that it is scary, because I had the exact same reaction.
We on
I
our loved, periods together?
Yes, maybe. never mind. I almost did something showgirlsy, but I'm not going to do that. Sorry. Let me check, you know. Anyway. The first third of the film with Rebecca Ferguson is a masterclass in suspense filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get to the different perspectives, what you start to gradually realize is that they're not giving you any new information. It's just the same dialogue from a different perspective. And then it ultimately becomes from three different perspectives. And I'm not sure what the message of the film is. And by the time you get to the Idris Elba-led third segment, it becomes incredibly melodramatic, ridiculous, and diffuses any sense of terror that I had in the beginning. And the ending is a giant kick in the nuts. Just saying.
Yes.
And there's a segment where a character is supposed to be making a literal life or death decision. And the character picks up the phone and calls his wife, and they have a very slow conversation. And in the beginning segment, we were like almost working on the clock. Like everything was happening in very real time almost. And at that point, that person has 2 minutes left to make a big call. And then he calls his wife and talks for what felt like 10 minutes. And I was just like, where's the urgency? What's going on here? It just died at the end for me.
It did. And I had a problem with there's a scene where the president, you know, is put in turmoil, and he's talking about, you know, I was listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what? I don't like, you've got the whole world in your hands right now, and you're talking about a fucking podcast. You're talking about what Barstool Sports was talking about when it comes to Dynamite. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. I was just like, I almost laughed out loud at that part.
Yeah.
And that made me sad, because I did have such dread in the beginning. And then by the end of it, I was just like, I just want to go home.
What this film suffers from, and then Joey, we haven't given you the chance to talk here, but what this film suffers from is screenwriter syndrome, where they're just like, oh, this is going to sound great. This is such a human moment. And then all of a sudden, all these little human moments don't fit into the tension narrative that you're trying to carry through.
Yeah.
Like, and there's one character has a unexpected fate that just comes out of absolutely nowhere and you barely even see it. And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened there? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, the helicopter scene. We can talk about that after offline, because I've
anyway,
got a theory.
Joey.
So I agree. I think the first third is the most successful part, because it is the kind of movie that we kind of know from Catherine Bigelow, where like people are like doing their jobs, and it's like introducing a world that is so technical and so just like, of course I don't know what this world is because I'm not part of it. I wasn't like in love with the movie. I've actually thought less of it as the more I thought about it, but it was
funny because the other one you thought more of as the time went on, and this one you thought less of.
This is a better movie.
It is a better movie. I think that it's not necessarily about the outcome of what's going to happen. I think the movie's thesis is really just like, well, we're really fucked anyway. And I wasn't sure if it was trying to suggest that you need to find human moments where you can find them. I was a little shocked that when they were like, we have 12 minutes. I was like, 12 minutes? I was like, okay. I think Rebecca Ferguson is great. I do wish, in terms of the story starting and stopping, I didn't necessarily mind that, but I wish it was a little bit more woven together. And I actually thought that some of the editing where you see, like, you know, the bust of Lincoln and you see the, I thought that was going to bother me more, because in the moment I was like, egads, but it didn't bug me, because, like, the kind of thing where, you know, like, you know what's going to happen and somebody pulls out a wallet and they have a picture of their kids. First of all, who still has pictures of their kids in their wallet? But oh well. I don't know. I thought that was actually something that Kathryn Bigelow does pretty well across a lot of her movies, especially that it has, like, a political lean to it, where it's like finding these little moments of, like, what people would actually do in the moment if they were faced with it, whether people find that cheesy or not. I feel like that is still a little bit in line with a lot of the other movies that she's done, especially Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. I do think that was, like, I think Greta Lee just happened to be in the area and they wanted to work with her. She was like, oh, right, or something. She's in a park. Great. Figure that out.
Or Caitlin Deaver.
Or Caitlin Deaver. That made more sense to me than I didn't know she was in it, but I was just like, all right, that makes sense. She's in this movie, whatever. She's on hiatus for Last of Us 2 and 3. I guess it didn't bug me as much as stuff bugged you guys. I didn't love it, but I guess I didn't care.
I think the format, the format wouldn't have bothered, because I compared it to the 2007 film Vantage Point. Oh, Jesus Christ, and I got yelled at by Joey.
Okay, they go back twice in this movie, not 17,000 times.
But, like, but Clarence is right. They don't add anything each time. You're not seeing.
I know. I'm just saying, don't invoke the name of Vantage Point. Jesus Christ.
Well,
jump scare.
The structure works against the film, because it isn't like Rashomon gave you different pieces of information about a central mystery. That's where that becomes most effective, is when you get new information. You do not get new information in here at all. It's just the same event told from different perspectives with the same conversation, the same dialogue. And I don't need that. I didn't get anything from it. And it became repetitive and annoying by the time you heard it for the third time.
Yes. Like, I keep thinking of Jared Harris going, my daughter lives in Chicago.
Yeah.
or the other guy who's like, you know, I thought it was interesting that Rebecca Ferguson's character does not say, my son, you know, I have a son. You know, she just goes, like, is like, go get our phones, we're gonna call. Like, I thought that was very realistic. Like,
hey, yes, except this, blah, blah, blah. Why is she telling him to drive west when they're in DC and I west know, is Chicago?
I was thinking that too. What, like, are you doing,
what are you,
bitch?
Doing? Like,
get out of there. But south. Then I laughed though south. With like with like they always say that, like, men, you know, can't empathize unless it's happening to them, you know, like directly, like, you know, not my daughter type of, like, oh, I have a daughter type of thing. And I thought it was funny that Jared Harris was like, oh, like, I wonder if he didn't have a daughter in Chicago, would he have cared? And then the guy who Barrington, who's like, my wife is 6 months pregnant. I was like, would he have cared if his wife wasn't 6 months pregnant?
I would like to point out a little bit of the irony of the person that they keep going to be like, Barrington, give me the truth, is the guy who plays J.D. Vance in Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah. No.
It was driving me nuts. Yep. And like, I felt like I wanted to, I was like, does anyone see this? Anyone? And then
I just think
it was just, I don't know, the sort of like grim reality of the fact, like, it does sort of, you know, spell it out for you, like a House of Dynamite. But I told Megan this yesterday, and I was like, this is the technology that can kill millions upon millions of people, and they're still like, we can't patch the phone line.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to
call. Can't merge the calls.
But
I think you're absolutely right. The whole film is about the fact that we are not prepared for any event like this, that we are just all fuck ups. But guess what? We already knew that.
I don't need to sit there for two hours to hear that. Make it a comedy
Yeah, they tried that. It's called Don't Look Up, and it wasn't good.
Oh, you're right. I guess that's true.
If you want this Don't Look version
Up is better than this.
If you want these, these are bold statements. If you want the comedy version of this, it's Dr. Strangelove and how I stopped. Right. You know, Dr. Strangelove is the comedy version of this. Like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Everybody in politics is inept except for Rebecca Ferguson.
Right.
So really, this movie should just be called "Thank God We Have Rebecca Ferguson." I also thought, I was kind of hoping that it was just going to be Idris Elba's voice, and it was just like, because I was going to write online, if I didn't know he was like, you were going to be able to see him in this, and I would be like, I'm sorry, Mr. President, your camera's off. Your camera's, Mr. President, please, can you turn on your camera? We talked about this. You have to be on camera.
Well, yeah. I felt like they were like setting that up as a mystery. Like, why isn't the president on camera? Well,
right. Yeah.
He's in the car.
Yeah, that was it. Like,
I just FaceTiming with the elephants.
Right.
Just, you know, in my mind, as I was driving home from the screening, I was thinking, okay, better film, do away with the structure. Rebecca Ferguson is the president.
Oh, interesting.
I think about that in my daily life.
That would be so much a better film. Not that Idris Elba isn't a great actor or a great president. I just feel like the way it was written doesn't serve him well.
No, it didn't. It was upsetting.
I do want to watch Rebecca Ferguson's section again, knowing what happens, because she is, unless I'm completely forgetting, other than like the First Lady and Caitlin Dever, I want to see how she plays some of the scenes in terms of how maybe women are expected to react in a crisis. Because like when she is in in that room, like alone with the guy sitting next to her, and she like turns away as like she wipes her face and then she turns back. That is my favorite 20 seconds in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
100%.
Because it's just, this is, if anything, this is a indictment of men in charge, and it should be like, it should just be women. So
yeah, but then you get scenes of, you know, JD Vance's wife who is pregnant and running, you know, down the hall and says, where are you going? And you know, she knows damn well where he's going. Then, you know, then the FEMA lady who was just put in charge, and then all of a sudden now she gets to be saved and she has nothing else to do. Then you've got Greta Lee who tells the president of the United States, I have a day off. I'm sorry, no government worker with that much power, with that much information, would ever say that. I'm on a day off. Right. No, if they get a call on their day off, they're going to respond. They're not going to question.
And they know that it's bad.
Yes. Yeah. Or the woman that's in the press corps, whose name I do not know, whose function I did not know, but the blonde
who
lady
has who has a boyfriend who works upstairs. We never figure out who that is.
Who is that actress? Because it was driving me nuts. Yeah. Look it up, right?
The CNN girl. That's all.
Yeah. Mrs. CNN.
Mrs. CNN. Yes. So, yeah. Women were kind of. Yeah.
They're not that interested in how women would react in a situation, because they give these cardboard characters that are just like, I'm pregnant. I am the justification for my man being upset and crying on the phone to Russia.
Yes. Right. Yes.
It's ridiculous. Right. The whole film is just, I think it's the worst film that Kathryn Bigelow has ever directed.
Of the ones I've seen, I was just really surprised by it. I was really like,
I couldn't believe that this was the same woman that had directed Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. Two films that are clinical. And this is so
sloppy. And even the way they're filmed is different. Like, this one was smoother and, like,
yeah,
like, it's not as jumpy. It was, like, at certain parts in the beginning, which I was like, okay, I'm in, you know. And then it kind of smooths out. And, like, I always like that Hurt Locker's rough around the edges. Zero Dark Thirty is rough around the edges. This one felt like a polished Netflix Catherine Bigelow film, which I guess it is.
It was Willa.
That is quite literally what it is.
Is it Willa Fitzgerald? Is that who that was? Yeah.
She was in Strange Darling. You want to see a weird, fucked up movie? Watch that movie.
Anyway, did not have a good time with that one.
No, I didn't either. And I don't think it's going to factor into any Oscar.
No, I used to say that it was this year's September 5 that it would just kind of fall off. It wishes it were September 5.
Yeah, I hate to say it.
Look at how clinical and just precise that film is made. And, you know,
right.
There's somebody who is, granted, the hostage crisis is not the same thing as a nuclear bomb being dropped on Chicago, right, potentially, but just how people reacted in that
or
situation.
Columbus.
I know. I thought about you. I was like, oh, Joey.
Can I please? I told Megan this, that when they were like, they naming the cities, I was like, they're all in Ohio. And then, like, number one, Columbus. The way that my Columbus press screening just started laughing and much louder than I expected to. I was like, oh, great.
I was hoping like a gay guy would yell out, like, oh, be nice or something like that. That's what I would have done.
Like, oh, bitch.
Yes. Like, oh.
Ooh. Ooh. Like the cat from Puss in Boots.
All right. Let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, why don't you go first?
I can't wait for The Smashing Machine. Fucking kill me. I know what Clarence is looking forward to.
I do too. Yes.
I think the movie that I am most looking forward to is Bone Lake, which I feel like I know.
That
like
porn? Porno?
Yeah.
Well, I don't even
Strangers
really know
by
what
the
it's
Bone
about.
Lake.
But like, I don't really know what it's about. But like, the poster has like a girl, like, screaming in a lake, and there's like skulls underneath the surface. But it says it's a horror movie, and I think it's like two couples accidentally book the same Airbnb. So I was like, oh, is it like Bone Lake and also Bone Lake?
Yeah.
So I guess that I'm in the spoopy mood. When we're done here, we're going to watch Charlie Brown, The Houses. Aww. I basically am really excited because my new cat is a black cat. He's like a walking Halloween decoration.
I call him Snoopy. I call Jackie Snoopy because he has a Snoopy costume. He's going as Snoopy for Halloween.
Aww.
Yeah.
Neville will probably have to be like a loaf of bread. He's been a hot dog for like the last 3 years. I think he needs to retire that costume. I guess I'm just trying to catch up on movies. I guess the what's the Daniel Day-Lewis movie? I always mispronounce it.
Anemone.
Is that what it's called?
Anemone. Yeah. Anemone.
I just like want it to be joke. Him dressed up as like the octopus. Can you imagine Daniel Day-Lewis going, "Aw, you made me." Like he would be able to pull that off.
I need Daniel Day-Lewis in a Pixar movie right now.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to catch up on movies because I guess 'tis the season. It's happening.
Megan.
I want to see Good Boy, and I'm probably gonna bring a thing of tissues with me. Because it's a dog, and I love dogs. They should have dog night where you bring your dogs with you to watch the movie. But that would also probably
ruin the experience. I don't think you should take your dog to see that.
That would ruin the experience for everybody. So I want to see that. I'm watching English Teacher and really enjoying that show so much. Oh my God, I love it. I finished the book Summer Skate by Leslie Cohen and Sean Avery, and I really enjoyed that. So I need a new book to read. Got to look through what I'm going to do there. And then I feel like there's something else that I've been listening to Ray, singer Ray. I've been enjoying that. Mm-hmm. And then that's about it, I guess. Yeah.
Can I say something about Good Boy real quick?
Yes.
It's just that I want everyone to go see this in a theater because it was supposed to just be, I think, mostly a Shudder release. And I think it was going to be in theaters, but they beefed up the amount of theaters that it's going to be in because of the trailer reaction online. And first of all, that dog is beautiful. That is a beautiful dog. And most amazing thing about that movie, the movie itself is 73 minutes. It feels like it tells a full story. It doesn't overstay its welcome. When I turned on the screener and I was like, 73 minutes, surely that can't be right. And I like,
you immediately went swing.
I know, I was just like, ah. It was just like, it's so good. I want this movie to make a bajillion dollars. So Indy the dog has
so we can do a podcast about him.
Yeah.
That never gets finished.
Maybe.
We're just on hiatus.
Yeah. For 3 years.
We just don't want to let go.
Yeah. Maybe we should just bring it back.
I think you should.
Yeah.
All right, Friday, October 3rd, which is 10-3. 10 plus 3 equals 13, which is Taylor Swift's favorite number. And that is the release of The Life of Sean. Yeah, exactly. The Life of a Showgirl album comes out on Friday. Sorry, I know people hate her in this community. I don't care. I'm taking my daughter to see.
I don't hate her. I hate the people who like her. Not you, but I mean like the people who make... No.
No. Swifties. You hate Swifties.
The people who are insane. Yes. The people who are insane. Yes.
Yes, those people are nuts. I'm taking my daughter to see Taylor Swift, the official release party of a showgirl, where I'm going to sit there for 80 something minutes and see lyric music videos that I wouldn't watch on YouTube at home for free.
believe it or not, I promised my friend that I would go see Life of a Showgirl with him. So I might be seeing that this week.
Let's all see it at the same time. I have no plan to see it, but I will just do. Actually, I don't think I want to be in a theater with.
I'd be scared. Yeah, I think I'd be scared.
It's going to be a lot of singing.
Yes.
We also, as a member of Critics' Choice Association, today received Jurassic World Rebirth screeners, and I'm very excited to watch that because I have not seen that. And now I can watch it at home for free.
Like, that's the first time anyone said that about that movie.
I know. Yes. Blue's not in it, though. Like, why even watch, really?
Why even bother?
Why even bother if Blue's not in it?
But also, October 3rd is the day that I've been waiting for weeks and weeks and weeks because Monster, the Ed Gein story, comes out on Netflix. And I am here for it. And that also means I am watching.
Netflix gave us screeners. Yeah,
I do. I am such an easy lay for this thing. Halloween Baking Championship is constantly on in my house. So
weird changes with this season.
Yeah, I don't love the format because I'm reminded how much better the old format is where you've got the baking little challenge going on first so you can get an extra advantage and then you have the elimination round, but now it's like 2 hours or an hour and a half. Last week, thank God it was only an hour and a half of people just running around and trying to sabotage each other.
Yeah, Jason was saying that it feels like the judges are in costume for less time.
Yes,
and he does not like that.
No.
And I don't like them watching each other bake during the elimination. I don't like that.
Or they have that gossipy stuff on the, that's what you're talking about when they're on the railing and they're like, oh my God, can you see what they're doing with that? Oh, and then have like run downstairs and like put fondant over the legs to make it look like a tablecloth.
She's like, stop it. Like Jason was mad last week when she was like, does this need more so-and-so in it? And he's like, you're helping them. This isn't fair. Like, who cares?
I don't know. Anyway, Halloween Baking Championship, it's always on. Whether it's this season or last season or like in a time loop of like any season comes up and I will watch it. So that is what is on in this house. I need to catch up to Survivor though, because I think that just started.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I did not.
Megan, a gay baker, Bendela Krems himself in the first episode.
Jesus.
He eliminates himself because he's like, I'm gay, but stressed.
Yeah, that's exactly. He's like, I can't handle it. It's too much.
Like, he's literally just like stirring, and he was like, I should be doing something. Wow, there's a camera in my face. Yeah.
That's great.
Sorry, Survivor. Yes. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I haven't seen Survivor. Anyway, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. Good conversation. So we are the 3 M's, the contending co-founders, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on your favorite podcast app and click like and subscribe down below and take a look. Make sure you're getting our new Apple podcast feed. If you're listening to this on Apple, then you definitely are. If you're listening to it on Spotify or on YouTube, check for the new feed. And we all wish you a very pleasant tomorrow and happy release day for all the Swifties out there.